experienced were not made of fiction, that they were true, that they were real. And because he was someone out of white privilege, it carried a different weight. It resonated differently within our United States consciousness. Perhaps this man actually was able to look behind the curtain, and perhaps because he revealed what he had done and he had shared what he had done, and he was doing it mostly to, I'm reading just a little bit in there, having read the book, I do remember some of the reasons he wanted to do this was to show that the plight of the American black man and woman was not fiction, was true, and that we had not overcome. This is not necessarily the case that I'm finding here with Rachel Dolezal. This is someone who took advantage of a situation, created a false persona, did work which ordinarily could have been beneficial, but built it on a lie. And part of that lie was having charged a black institution with discrimination and using those tools that were there to protect people of color, decided to be the fox in the hen house, if you will, and undermine all of the good work that she could have been credited with by having told a lie and then having reinforced that lie. Now, I know in the beginning you heard the management and leadership of the Spokane NAACP saying, "We stand behind." And that makes sense. I mean, on the face of it, if you recall, the NAACP was started by white allies and black leadership members, black cultural leadership members who, well, for want of a better way of saying it, were looking like they were black. And the white allies did not try to change their identity. They were straightforward and making use of their white privilege and their economic privilege and their academic opportunities to help advance the situation of people of color at that time. But it wasn't as simple as that to say we support her, because unfortunately due diligence hadn't been done. And so what you had was a group who was then put in a position of having to backtrack and change their mine and not be so supportive. What does that do? Well, if you've looked at some of the press, you find that Spokane is in a position where they have said, "We are trying to repair the damage." Now, you wouldn't say you're repairing damage if this was all well and good, would you? Nope. And you wouldn't say that we are trying to repair the damage if there hadn't been some way that their integrity had been impugned, would you? No, you wouldn't. So you look at the news right now, and you've got the new president of the Spokane NAACP, who is in the press and who is not in the best of health, coming forward and saying, "Okay, yes, we have to repair damage," and those are the phrases used. You know, we've got to take care of our integrity. This person is found to be not wholly the ally that we had in it, we had expected. And so you have someone who is saying you can't portray that you've lived a particular life experience of a particular race that you aren't part of. And so there you go. You've got big holes in the foundation. I'm interested today to find out, how do we look at allies? How do we set forth the characteristics for allies? Do we look for the same levels of integrity that we do with our leaders? Should we? I think we should, but everybody has a different idea. There are many people who have supported her and say, well, she did good work. She did good work. And is that good work outweighed by the damage done now when you have another group who's working for social change for Black Americans, well, just people of color in general, really, who has been damaged by this? I think that we need to give a little pushback, because what has happened here, at least what I see happening, is a subtle reimagining or redefining of what an ally should or shouldn't be able to do. I don't mind that it is a person who's either white or whatever color, but I would think that integrity would be foremost in terms of characteristics that the person should have. And then, how do we repair this damage? Do you think there's damage to be done? Do you think that this is all going to blow over and it's going to be not a problem? Or do you, too, see some subtle changes in how people are perceiving how allies should behave, that perhaps allies are held to a different standard than the leaders of color in a community, that allies have a free hand to do whatever they want in terms of helping and see their opportunity to help by any means necessary? I'd like to get the conversation rolling. Anybody can call in. New callers are welcome. Especially, I would like to hear from those people who work with white allies, and I'd like to hear from white allies as well. And by ally, I mean someone who understands exactly what the struggle is, believes that there is a struggle, and is willing to listen to and take instruction from people of color as to what they need and what kind of help they need. Phone number is 503-231-8187. And please call early, because I have to leave a little early today, and so I don't want to miss your call. I've got somebody waiting on the line for conversation. Good morning, Jackson.
Good morning, Miss Celeste. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Good, good. It's good to hear your voice over the airwaves again.
Oh, thank you.
This situation with the young lady in Spokane, I don't know. I'm so conflicted because there's so many issues that the NAACP has to iron out first.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I understand the importance of having allies, and the African American community absolutely needs them. It's just that it's very possible that our allies may not know who to ally themselves with, because the African American community is so splintered. And there's so much paradox and ironies with the African American community that has not really been dealt with.
Let me stop you right there, Jackson. I want you to explain what you mean by paradoxes and ironies. I have my idea, but I'd love to hear yours.
The paradoxes, meaning there are issues with a faction of African Americans that will wait to be validated by the white establishment.
Before they do anything?
Well, I remember hearing Miss Joy DeGruy's story about how, you know, she was somewhat of a firebrand, and she was just saying it the way she saw it, and there was a group of Black people who distanced themselves from her until she was accepted for what she was saying. And then she said, well, all of a sudden, they said, well, you can sit by me. You can sit next to me.
Ah, yes.
So there's a great deal of fear that's going to have to be dealt with before we could actually take our allies on, because our allies are going to come in, and they're going to hit two or maybe three different factions amongst the African-American community, and they might be a little confused.
You bring up a really good point. For one thing, and this is what all of us are saying all the time, we're not a homogenous group. We're not a monolithic group. And one reason is because, depending on where you are, who you are at any given time, you have experienced different aspects of this, I call it the evil machinery called racism. You know, it affects you in different ways. And then if you have any other culture within yourself, like say you're a Caribbean black, and you've immigrated to this country and your family has been here for a few generations, you might now be called African American, but you still have a slight different sensibility about it. Or, you know, just maybe you were raised in the South and you're not quite adhering to some of the black sensibilities that come from the North. So I totally feel you.
Well, yes, ma'am. The interesting thing I've noticed about Caribbeans and Africans that we all have in common is that we have to deal with colonization and what colonization has done to our psychology.
Yes.
And the problem here is that while we are very different people coming from different points of view, we're all still struggling with the same experience.
True.
So that's the paradox behind all of this. Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, well, I'm different from her, she's different from me, blah, 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 blah. And the one drop rule applies to every last one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to watch their children, or at least be weary that their children don't become ensnared into the criminal justice system and the prison industrial complex. You know, I mean, this is something that we all have to worry about, if your children, especially if they're black men, you know. So, I'm listening to this issue concerning this lady in Spokane, and I scratch my head out of question. You know, it's like, what's really going on here? And people say, I hear some people that are very are strong about it. I mean, and I'm thinking, this is the NAACP. These are the same people who took money from very wily, questionable people,
mm-hmm.
You know,
yes.
The NAACP will fight for the rights of African Americans, but if you are a vociferous white supremacist, we will take your money from you under the table.
Okay, now you know you got to prove that. you got to tell me a resource.
What's the name of the basketball? What's the name of the basketball owner who made those interesting remarks?
Now I confess, I don't think you're talking about Trump, because as far as I know, he doesn't have a team.
Trump. He's the basketball owner.
Are you talking about?
Excuse me.
Okay, no, I don't remember which one it is, so you'd have to tell me.
It's right at the tip of my tongue.
Okay, well, tell us the team he owns, and then we can research.
He was being taped into saying, "Well, you could."
Right, I know who you're talking about. Yes.
Right.
Yes, and his girlfriend outed him.
Exactly. You know,
Donald Sterling, yes.
Donald Sterling, exactly. Yeah. And when I heard that, I went, okay, finally, some truth is starting to come out behind this machine.
Yes.
No, so I'm saying is that my naivete towards these minority organizations that are there to protect minorities is basically being washed away. I'm starting to learn how to follow the money. I'm starting to understand that there are people who can be bought, and people who can be bought are going to be the ones who are going to have the least of it, and it's going to be African Americans, quite frankly. Okay? We did not inherit much because of where our grandparents and parents are coming from. We're still fighting.
Okay, so now, Jackson, you've taken it to a whole different place. No.
Right,
that's okay.
It's so connected to her.
It is. It is. I'm just saying that you and I need to have another conversation. But
I understand.
Yeah.
It's just this whole situation is so convoluted that when I look at that one young lady in Spokane,
mm-hmm.
Wow. I mean, you know, I don't know what to say considering the backdrop of what we're dealing with here.
That's true. And that's one reason why I think, okay, we need to sort it out. And your call is important, because what you've pointed out is this is not one single strand. This is a piece that is connected to so many different other parts of our experience.
Concerning the NAACP of all people, of all organizations, I'm sorry.
Well, We should have more of a conversation about this. Don't forget, you can always hit us up online so we can continue the conversation. And that would be at moretalkradio@gmail.com. But thank you for getting it started, and thank you for calling.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city. We are here from 8 until 9 a.m. every Monday, well, barring holidays. And it's an opportunity to talk with your neighbor like the electronic cafeteria. Phone number 503-231-8187, and I'll go to the next caller. Good morning, Francis.
Hello. Well, I guess you'd say I'm an ally, a wife, a mother, a sister-in-law, a daughter-in-law, a cousin, an auntie, or whatever. But I've been very active in issues here in Portland for the last 44 years. I witnessed my African-American husband be railroaded to prison when I was pregnant with our first son, and I've seen a whole lot since then. So I would never presume or think I had the white privilege to say that I was black or to even pretend that I was, and I would never do that. But I've also identified with the issues that, for example, our local NAACP has dealt with, and that's why I joined the NAACP, was because of the racial profiling that my children and their friends and cousins and relatives experienced on a daily basis here in Portland. So, and I understand that this woman did do some very good work for the NAACP in Spokane. So I don't understand her mind or thinking or why she chose to accept. She says that the first somebody thought she was, so she just started to go along with it. And I think, I don't know what I think about that. But to just suggest that because she deceived people about her racial identity, that her work was not valuable and that somehow things have been destroyed, I'm not sure about that. I don't think that's the case.
So why don't you think it's the case? Because if
I don't
she's
know what has
trouble,
happened, what is the damage exactly that we're talking about? I don't know what damage was
well,
done.
Well, if nothing else,
because our local name.
Okay, wait a minute. I'm trying to answer your question here, Francis.
Let me finish what you just said, though. Our local NAACP has had its own issues with our own leadership here that had nothing to do with them lying about their race, but there's been a lot of internal politics that don't allow our NAACP to address community issues in a manner that they could be. So what were you going to say?
Well, my point is that if you're lying about who you are and you have no qualms about suing the black college that you went to, the black university you went to, and claiming discrimination, I find
that
those
before she
Okay, let me finish now. It doesn't matter whether it's before or after. This is a person who built a persona on multiple lies. Okay, that's what I'm talking about, integrity, personal integrity. I find that personal integrity is not separate from professional integrity because it becomes tainted. Then everybody has to second guess what you've done, why you've done it, and if what you've done will stand. And the fact that this woman insisted on lying up to the very end, and as in her own words, the new president of the NAACP in Spokane says that she is focusing on repairing the damage from the recent Rachel Dolezal controversy. And this is Naima Quarles Burnley. Okay.
Right.
So she said that it was discovered after she had misled the constituents. You know, when you say that and you are the leadership, you're talking about a damage to integrity, and you're talking about the confusion that might be perceived by anybody else who would like to ally themselves. It's like our first caller Jackson was saying, you know, then that brings into question whether any of the charges about receiving money under the table are true. Then people have to decide whether or not they want to be supportive. That has a ripple effect, and that's what we're talking about, the blowback. So I'm kind of
talking about the publicity and the negative publicity and how the organization is perceived.
That's part of what I'm saying.
That seems to happen a lot of times in a lot of situations and a lot of
So does that excuse what she's doing?
One person's behavior somehow taints the entire organization.
Well, and one apple does spoil a barrel.
Where we always seem to focus on the one person, and that's kind of, and somehow that, I don't know, when that Sterling man down there, the L.A. Clippers owner, made his statements to his girlfriend, and that got outed. I remember one player, and he was from Portland, when they were interviewing the NBA basketball players about what they felt about that. His comment was, well, he's not the only one. And I'm not suggesting this is the same situation, but what I'm saying is, so we focused on Donald Sterling, and when he had to be, you know, he had to give up his team because of the things he said, somehow people think that the situation has been taken care of.
And nobody thinks that.
Probably a whole bunch of
other nobody things thinks that it's been fixed. And if they think it's been fixed, they're not honest with themselves. But I want to thank you for your call, Francis. I got a lineup of other folks.
Well, thanks for bringing up this subject, because it's a very good one. And as an ally and a mom, I appreciate the work that the NAACP does, and probably the work that woman, I can never remember her name, did. But I do not think that it's okay to presume that you can, because a black woman wouldn't be able to say that she's a white woman whenever she feels like it.
Francis, gotta go. Gotta go. Thank you. You're absolutely right. Okay. You are listening to More Talk Radio. Phone number is 503-231-8187. So Frances, being a white woman, is not quite sure she sees damage done. And that's part of what we're talking about, the different perceptions we have coming out of this and how we get to move forward from this. And in including that, just what kinds of credentials, characteristics, personality traits, if you will, should we be looking at in our allies? Some people seem to think that there's no damage done. Well, if the program is do what you will and hope that it's going to be out okay, then I guess you can do whatever you want. I just don't want to be part of that organization, because just like Naima from Spokane is saying, not just the integrity of the former president, but the integrity of the organization as a whole is now in question. So what good has she done? This woman who purported to have done lots of good has now not only hurt the NAACP, and this is an organization that's had its own trials and tribulations, regardless of what city it's been in, but it hurt financially her alma mater, Howard University. So she out of the gate is not what I would call an ally. You don't take an ally's tools or resources or opportunities and use them to destroy the foundation, do you? I wonder. We'll go to our next caller. Good morning, Joanne.
Yes, hello. I'm a low-income person. I have lousy health and a lousy life. But here's what I did. I wanted to do something. I gave $30 for a membership in the NAACP, and I told them, I went to the meeting, I told them I can't be an active member because of my health and that, and I also told them that I couldn't hear most of them talk at the meeting because I have a hissing problem and no hearing aid. So am I an ally or a nuisance to the NAACP? I'll get off the air.
Well, let me put it to you this way, Joanne. If you, like the widow, giving her last 2 cents or giving money to an organization to do some good work, and you are optimistic and hopeful that this is the kind of thing that can make it better for all people, I would call that an ally. And you identified the challenges and the obstacles you would have in being a full participant. So you didn't go be, you didn't get out of your lane. You stayed in your lane. So that would be somebody who recognizes what they can contribute and contributes out of that. And I would say that would make you an ally. The moment we get out of our lane, we get out of our scope, our abilities, get out of who we really are and what we really have to offer, that's not an ally. That is, I believe that's called an albatross around the neck. That's what I think it is. I mean, whole different A word, but, you know, and an albatross around the neck is just some way of saying that you're not contributing anything. But you, Joanne, by doing what you're doing and staying in your lane, that makes you an ally. But, you know, we when it comes to leadership, we should be expecting so much more. To those whom much is given, much is required. So this is a person who has studied Black history and so ostensibly should understand the challenges and should understand what is needed to be a good ally, and supposedly is teaching other people about Black history, and would then hopefully being conscientious and inculcating the kinds of leadership characteristics that we would want in any organization that was trying to advance people's causes. And one wonders what kind of teacher you are. Is this do as I say and not as I do, or don't do what I say or do, or don't do what you see me doing? Or I'm not quite sure. But the bottom line is, for me, integrity is bedrock. And not taking advantage of a resource that's designed to help those who are oppressed, that's bedrock. Those are two fundamental characteristics that, if not present, are deal breakers for me. Now, I'm not sure how you feel. We've had one person who thought that maybe it wasn't a problem, but at the same time admitted that she wasn't a woman of color. And we have a man who's called in and said, okay, we sometimes confuse our allies because they are not sure what area they should be working on, and they're not sure which is the running line or the mission line or the mission story of the group. And you know, to that I would say, then you need to spend more time, because it's not that the group is not worthy of help. It's just that they're in an infancy stage. Do you ignore a stumbling baby because they're not walking properly, or do you offer support? And that's in no way to disparage an organization and say that they have an immature mission. It's just to say that any group working with a lot of challenges and working with a lot of setbacks and working within a system that is designed to create nothing but failure for them is going to need some assistance. And all of us need allies at one point or another for our well-being. And so you have to really know who you are to know how to offer. And you have to know who you are to know if you're mature enough to stay in your lane. We still have time for the conversation. I've only heard from 3 people, and I'm sure that there's still more conversation going on out there. What do you think are the characteristics for our allies that we should be looking for? 503-231-8187. Good morning, Harry.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. The president, chapter president of the Spokane NAACP has a kind of a difficult job in that how to move forward. Do you actually sue her for what she did? Also the other members. What you talk about integrity and stuff. The only way to go through that is maybe have an FBI background check. So I don't think they want to do that either.
Well, there's no reason why they can't have the same kind of background checks we've had for any upper management job or certain types of jobs. You know, I had a pretty thorough background check for mine.
Okay. But I also noticed that the Spokane chapter of NAACP, the last 20 years, it's been very active, even nationwide. It's been in news reports, even in national news reports. So I was trying to figure out how she got from Nevada to that one. And also, is there that many black people in Spokane?
Well, now what has that got to do with integrity in allies? Can you explain that, why you would say that?
Well, this is just an off question about that.
I'm trying to be diplomatic here, Harry. Now, how many black folks in Spokane are there got to do with having integrity in our allies? Seriously. I'm just going to hold you to it since you brought it up. Is that your answer?
Yep, that's it.
Well, I guess that's the end of this conversation, isn't it?
Well, no, just...
If you're going to call and cast confusion and ask not the most intelligent questions, I think that's the end of the conversation.
Oh, well, if you want to... I know you want to pigeon-toe this...
No, I'm not trying to pigeon-toe... Then answer my question. You got 30 seconds. Answer my question, please, because you asked it.
I asked you the question, is there a lot of black people in Spokane?
And my answer was, that has nothing to do with integrity in allies. And unfortunately, you're starting to demonstrate that.
No, you are.
Oh, wow. And just like Pee Wee Herman says, I know you are. Thank you for your non-conversation. Good morning, Mike.
Yeah, hello?
Yeah, you're here.
Okay, you know, first of all, being black is really about a state of mind. It's more so than your color. And I think that because we live in America and everything is identified by what color somebody is, then we overlook the fact that there are black people as black as coal, but they say their mind is white. And so this lady, you know, my whole question about this lady, I could care less what color she was. My most concern was her state of mind. If she had a black state of mind, then I'm okay with that.
So you're okay with the fact that she lied, and you're okay with the fact that she sued an organization because they decided that she wasn't quite what they were looking for, and she had a hissy fit. You're okay with that?
Well, like I said, she says she identified with being black. If that's her state of mind, then I have to accept that. See, the old saying, all is fair in love and war. This is war.
Okay.
And
so you're okay with an ally that's going to lie to you and you can't trust?
I'm saying her state of mind. We have to check out her state of mind. If her state of mind is that she was black, and she said she identified as being black, they don't have a problem with that. If that's her state of mind, if she saw herself as being, look at Sammy Davis Jr. saw himself as being a Jew. You know, he was black, but he said he was Jewish.
But there are black Jews, Michael.
There's
black Jews. But that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking, is it okay to have an ally who does not have integrity? Do we want to have a better idea of business and personal and spiritual characteristics and qualities, personality qualities? Do we want to start thinking more about what it takes to be a good ally, or are we going to accept people who, quote unquote, do work and ignore the trash that they do?
Well, you know, I think from a strategic point of view, I mean, what you're saying, you know, it sounds good, but from a strategic point of view, I think that it was beneficial to have a white person in that position, because they're going to be privy to go places that a black person identified as being black ain't going to be able to go. And she's going to be able to get up next to certain types of white people, because she's white.
But and that would have been good if she'd have been honest and upfront from the beginning, wouldn't it?
Well, she might not have been able to get up close to people if she was honest in the beginning.
But she would have been honestly white. And you're saying that her being white could have been an asset. However, she didn't say she was white, so is it really an asset?
Yeah, if she has a black state of mind and a white skin, and she's able to influence white folks, get in certain circles, that's a benefit, I think, personally.
Well, the problem was she wasn't identifying as what you're saying. That's not how she identified herself. She identified herself as a black-skinned person, not the same as a black state of mind. But I hear you, and unfortunately, I'm at the point where I have to leave, but I'm glad you called in, because what you did is you're helping refine our focus. I didn't want you to go just yet. I'm going to try to squeeze one more in. But first, let you know what's coming up today on KBOO. At 9 o'clock, the Old Mole Variety Hour with Bill Resnick interviewing Gordon Lafer of the University of Oregon, who argues that education cannot end poverty. I got to hear that show. Jan Hocken remembers Hugo de Courtenay. An outstanding educator and activist. And Jan Hocken and Todd Sloan discuss a new report on the American Psychological Association and their involvement with the CIA. 10 o'clock brings Chris Andre, host of Air Cascadia, who have more on Greece with analyst James Henry. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support for the KBOO Community Radio Station. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Do that. Good morning, Tim. I've only got a few minutes, but thank you for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to call up and put in my opinion, and I am, I guess, genetically white for the most part. I've been an organizer a lot of years of my life, and I believe that it's extremely important that if you're going to have allies, that integrity is one of the top things they have to have, especially if they're an outsider coming into a group and trying to build that group or assist that group, empower them. Or whatever, if there's no integrity there, if it's based on a lie, everything could fall apart in no time. If we're going to have a struggle for human rights and a decent world to live in for all of us, then it can't be based on lies. It's got to be based on truth. It's got to be based on love and respect. Anyways, I just had to share that.
Well, I thank you for that, you know, because by giving those kinds of qualities, you know what you build will last.
That
whether it is a better lifestyle for people or just a stronger love relationship with your neighbor or your family, that's something that will endure.
That's true, my sister. That's right.
All righty.
That's what we need to build.
Well, thank you so much for building that by having the final word.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
You too. And you're listening to your community connection, KBOO Portland. Stay tuned as our dauntless engineer Steve will have more programming information for you. I've enjoyed your calls and conversations, and we hope that you have a wonderful week. Take care.
Coming up next is the Old Mole Variety Shop. Variety Hour, but first we'll listen to Between the Lines.
In the face of imminent default on its $320 billion debt and enormous pressure to reach an agreement with its European Union creditors, the Greek people overwhelmingly rejected the imposition of new austerity measures in a historic July 5th referendum. The 61.3% of Greeks who cast ballots for a no vote confirmed majority national support for the governing Syriza party's pledge to challenge harsh Eurozone austerity measures when it won power last January. Eurozone leaders warned that the results of the referendum had not changed the EU's insistence that Greece adopt tough structural economic reforms in exchange for a third bailout package. But Syriza party leader and Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras believes the referendum victory, along with support from most opposition parties, strengthens his negotiating position in a new round of talks. There's much at stake in upcoming negotiations as Greek banks teeter on the brink of insolvency and unknown consequences for the European Union if Greece is forced to leave the euro and return to its old currency, the drachma. While there's disagreement on what the outcome may be, there's no doubt there's more pain ahead for the Greek people, who have already suffered through 5 years of severe depression that has brought 25% unemployment and a 23% reduction in the national budget. Your reporter spoke with James S. Henry, an economist, lawyer, and investigative journalist. Henry, former chief economist at the international consultancy firm McKinsey & Company, who is now a senior fellow at Columbia University's Center for Sustainable International Investment, discusses the significance of the outcome of the Greek referendum and the major issues in the difficult negotiations ahead.
Well, I think the Greek people have had 6 years of austerity under the EU and the ECB, the European Central Bank, the IMF. The debt ratio has actually increased to more than 180% of GDP, and they've seen dramatic reductions in income per capita, 25% unemployment, pensions down 44%, and 20% of the population requiring food aid. They've said enough is enough. We've tried the bloodletting approach to cutting spending and raising sales taxes, VAT taxes, under the latest proposal from the EU would go to, from the Eurogroup, would go to 23%. And they resoundingly said, 61.3% said no to the latest term sheet from the Eurogroup, basically saying no more austerity. So this is on top of a new IMF report about 10 days ago, which basically threw in the towel. I mean, said, yeah, austerity has not worked. Maybe it's your fault, maybe it's ours, but basically, what the Greek people need is much more substantial debt relief, better terms, and some new concessions. And so, in fact, most of the major economists around the planet are agreeing that the EU is, and Germany in particular, which is kind of behind this whole scene, is acting in a kind of stubborn and intransigent way, that the European Central Bank has not behaved like a central bank. They haven't stood behind the banks here. They basically put a cap on how much lending they would do to the banking system there. So there's a short-term currency crisis in the country. I think independent objective observers would say, look, Greece is objectively bankrupt. And if you were a private company like General Motors in 2010, we basically allowed them to go Chapter 11, and we shared the burden of restructuring their debt with creditors, had to take a substantial debt reduction. Unfortunately, we don't have any international bankruptcy courts for governments, and that's been a major problem for the international system for the last 30 years, and Greece is just the latest example of that. If you compare the United States, which has an unemployment rate now below 5.5%, with the EU, which is still above 10, and the southern European countries, unemployment north of 20 to 25% in Italy and Greece and Spain, it's clear that the hyper-austerity program pushed basically by the German finance minister has been a failure.
James, here's a question. By withdrawing support for Greek banks in advance of the referendum vote, were the leaders of the European Commission, the European Central Bank, and the IMF attempting to intimidate Greek voters into casting ballots –
undermining Alexis Tsipras of the Syriza party and thereby aiding in the removal of his party from power in Greece?
I think this was simply about politics. It's not about economics. Essentially, they were hoping that Greek population would vote yes in favor of retaining the euro. Most Greeks want to retain the euro. They've had terrible experiences with hyperinflation when the Germans occupied the country in the 40s, and they don't want to go back to the drachma. But what they do want is debt relief. So, yes, it was a blatant attempt to unseat the left-wing government that came in January, because the Eurogroup has its eyes not on Greece. They have their eyes on Spain, which has a 1.1 trillion euro debt, on Italy, which has a 2.1 trillion euro debt, and on Portugal. In all of these governments, all of these situations, the left is on the rise, simply because Europe-wide, even countries like Finland, have suffered from this hyper-austerity program that the EU has been pushing.
James Henry, what do you believe the effect of this no vote in Greece will have across Europe, especially for supporters of left anti-austerity parties like Podemos in Spain, which has been garnering a lot of support these days, and in other countries such as Italy, Portugal, and Ireland? What's the message that comes out of Greece for these folks?
Well, that's part of the issue here. You know, we're really waiting to see what impact this no vote has on the European system. In principle, it basically says, you know, the statistics today were interesting. If you look at middle and lower income voters in Greece, the statistics are, you know, that 70% of lower income Greeks voted against austerity. So this is becoming a bit of a class war. And I think, you know, if this, I mean, each one of these economies is in a slightly different position. We've seen some return to economic growth in Spain this year, as well as in Italy. So it's not quite as dire a situation in those cases. But there's no question that Podemos and, you know, the left in Italy are taking, you know, sort of seeing this as a positive sign for their anti-austerity programs. And so I think, you know, if the EU again wants to be short-sighted about this, they'll, you know, reject any compromises. But what's really needed to depolarize the situation is some debt relief for the Greeks.
That was James S. Henry, an economist, lawyer, and investigative journalist, who is now a senior fellow at Columbia University's Center for Sustainable International Investment. Find more perspectives on the Greek debt crisis and upcoming negotiations by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.
Should it be harder for landlords to evict their tenants for no reason at all?
Should safe and healthy homes come before the interests of private investment?
Is the rent too damn high?
If you answered yes to any of these questions, join us for the next Portland Renters Assembly.
KABU is a proud sponsor of the Portland Renters Assembly, a gathering of people united by the burden of rent and committed to housing as a human right.
The next two assemblies are on Sunday, July 12th, from 12 to 2 p.m. at the North Portland Library, with speakers on how race intersects with gentrification.
And on Wednesday, July 15th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Colonel Sumner's Park, with speakers on community organizing and mobilizing.
Tell your story and join the conversation. For more information, go to kboo.fm and click on Community Events.
Attention, KABU members. You are invited to give your feedback on KABU's draft mission and vision statements. Based on member feedback from the recent survey and member retreat, KABU board and staff members created draft mission and vision statements. Now we want to know what you think. This is your chance to help define KABU's guiding principles and priorities. Visit KABU.fm to review the draft mission and vision statements and submit your comments. Paper copies of the draft statements are also available at the station. Comments are due July 17th. If you have questions, please contact Monica Beamer at monica@kabu.org. Thank you for contributing to the development of KABU's mission and vision statements and for your support of community radio.
Wish I was a mole in the ground. Wish I was a mole in the ground. If I was a mole in the ground, I'd rip those mountains down. And I wished I was a mole in the ground. Wish I was a book in a library. Wish I was a book in a library. If I was a book in a library, then I'd finally be free. I wished I was a book in a library.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland, the nation's only remaining community-owned and democratically run radio station. Welcome to the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm Tom Becker. Joe Clement is engineering. The Old Mole is dedicated to bringing you different perspectives on history, culture, politics, and current events than that of the corporate compromise news media. American youth are inculcated with the belief that one must get a higher education in order to succeed. But there is a paradox here whereby this may be a sound strategy for the individual. It cannot succeed in ending poverty or overcoming vast inequities in income distribution. While education can enrich lives in many ways, many necessary and vital jobs just do not require an advanced education. Today on the Old Mole, Bill Resnick interviews Gordon Lafer, who teaches at the University of Oregon